You're listening to a message from Every Nation GTA. For more information, please visit our website at everynationgta.org.
My name's Sheila. On behalf of everyone who calls Every Nation GTA home, welcome. If it's your first time with us, if you've just been coming for a few weeks or a few months, we are glad to have you. If you have never filled out the blue card we call it, has its own name. It's our little welcome gift to you. If you fill this out, give us a little bit of information about you, gives us the opportunity to stay in touch with you, events, upcoming things about the church, drop it in at the connection table in the lobby, and we actually have a gift for you. So thank you for those of you who have and haven't and will do this today. If you don't have a card, you can get one on the table. Well, the struggle is real. This is, you know, the hashtag, and it's usually ironic, and it's about first world problems. But the struggle is real. The things we face in life, the internal things, the world around us, the struggle is real. Life isn't like a breeze. And as life goes on, maybe when you're a kid, you think it's going to be easy, but you realize there's lots of challenges. And so we're looking at that this week, this month. We're spending about 6 weeks in the book of Habakkuk, not something that we often tackle as a church. Habakkuk was a prophet, a minor prophet, we call him, because it's a short book in the Old Testament. And it's a man, a prophet, lamenting to God about the state of the world and asking God why, and God, answer my questions. And God answers his questions, and he doesn't like the answer. And we've been working through this, the struggle for faith in the midst of a time that's difficult. And last week we ended off hearing, but we need to live by faith in when the struggle is real and when life is difficult. Well, today we're in a chunk of Habakkuk that is full of these things, five of them. Woe. You know, we sometimes go, woe is me, life is difficult. Well, sometimes woe, when an Old Testament prophet uses the word woe, he's proclaiming judgment. Sometimes it's just a reflection, a lament on how difficult and horrible things are in the time. So we're stepping back in history before the time of Christ and reading today the difficulties in the land, in what was surrounding the people of Israel, the world they were living in, the nation they were in the midst of, and the struggles that they were facing. So we've got a long portion to read today. It's a little bit poetic, some of the language. I'm going to break it down quickly for you once we get through our 15 verses, but try to follow along as I read to you. Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 5 to 20. Moreover, wine is a traitor, an arrogant man who is never at rest. His greed is as wide as Sheol. Like death, he never has enough. He gathers himself all nations and collects as his own all peoples. Shall not these take up their taunt against him with scoffing and riddles for him and say, woe to him who heaps up that which is not his own? For how long? And loads himself with pledges. Will not your debtors suddenly arise? And those awake who will make you tremble? Then you will be spoiled for them, because you have plundered many nations. All the remnant of the peoples shall plunder you, the blood of men and violence to the earth, to cities and all who dwell in them. Wow, aren't you glad you came to church to hear this? No. Sad state of affairs. Woe to him who gets evil gain for his house, to set his nest on high, to be safe from the reach of harm. You have devised shame for your house by cutting off many peoples. You have forfeited your life, for the stone will cry out from the wall, and the beam from the woodwork will respond. Woe to him who builds a city with blood and founds a city on iniquity. Behold, it is not the Lord of hosts. Is it not the Lord of hosts that peoples labor merely for fire and nations weary themselves for nothing? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Woe to him who makes his neighbors drink. You pour out your wrath, you make them drunk in order to gaze on their nakedness. You will have your fill of shame instead of glory. drink yourself and show your uncircumcision. The cup of the Lord's right hand will come to you, and utter shame will be upon your glory. The violence done to Lebanon will overwhelm you, as will the destruction of the beasts that terrified them. For the blood of man and violence to the earth, to the cities and all who dwell in them. What profit is an idol when its maker has shaped it, a metal image, a teacher of lies? For its maker trusts in his own creation when he makes speechless idols. Woe to him who says to a wooden thing, awake, to the silent stone, arise. Can this teach? Behold, it is overlaid with silver and gold, and there is no breath in it. But, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Let's pray. Father, as we look through this sometimes disturbing passage from Habakkuk and his reflection on the world that he lives in. Father, today as we look at this, let us look at hope and courage and things you might and you will be speaking to us. For your word is relevant today, in Jesus' name. Well, I've been thinking about this. I knew that I had to tackle this passage. And I've been thinking about this for quite a number of weeks now. And as I've been reflecting and thinking about this portion, I've been thinking big picture. Why do I read Habakkuk? Why do I personally go back to this little book? Why do I reflect on it? And I realize that I go back to Habakkuk because inside me, I think I know, but I don't know. I think I know the answers to the world's problems, but I don't know. I think I know what's absolutely best for me, but I don't know. I think I probably know what's best for you, but I don't know. And as I go through the book of Habakkuk, I'm reminded, Habakkuk thought surely things had to be a certain way, and God said not only are they going to not be that way, they're actually going to be worse. But then God brings through the book of Habakkuk us to a place of peace and trust and confidence in him. So when we read that, when we looked at those 15 verses, there's a lot of just kind of poetic references to things about how evil the nation of Babylon was at that time. A few things that I'll pull out. Arrogance. They were an arrogant people. It says he sets his nest on high, safe from harm. In other words, they felt like they could protect themselves. They had what it took. There was exploitation and injustice. They heaped up what was not their own. They plundered many. There was greed. There's a little phrase that says that like death, he never has enough. And this is actually something, a metaphor you see in the Old Testament, speaking of death never being satisfied. And if you think you play that out, everybody's going to die. Death's always going to be adding to itself. But it's a metaphor for always wanting more and more, that sense of greed and never having enough. It was a society that abused power. The towns were built with the blood of others. There was abuse of alcohol. It said he made his neighbors drink. There was sexual immorality. It referred to looking on someone's nakedness or uncovering your circumcision. I'm not going to explain that. There was environmental destruction. We think, oh, protecting the environment is a 20th and 21st century thing. But the reflection of Habakkuk was that there was destruction of beast and violence to the earth, to the very physical earth itself. There was idolatry. We spent the month of September looking at idolatry, that something that man created himself, he put his trust in. He was putting his trust in his own creation. These were people marked with pride and arrogance, a nation that was built by exploiting others. And as I look at this, I think, and isn't that often what we see in the world around us today? Solomon, in the book of Ecclesiastes, said this: what has been done is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. And it's the pattern of history. Sometimes we think things have never been worse than what they are today in the world, and yet if we understand and we know history, we know that this is a broken place. Last week, Bert put up that picture we often look at where God created things perfectly, and then sin entered and there was a fall, and Jesus came and he's restoring things to us, but we still live in a broken world. And our future hope is that one day everything will be made perfect. But right now, the world we live in is often like what Habakkuk painted, where there's injustice and there's greed and there's abuse of power and there's things going on around us. And I don't think God just wants us, as we look at this, to think, oh, look at the evil things out there. Because James, in the book of James, the brother Lord, he said, you know, evil kind of starts, my paraphrase, but in our own hearts. So I think God wants us to understand what's going on around us, but then also to be able to look at the inside of us. Some things never change, and they haven't changed. No, there's nothing new under the sun. So why do I turn to the book of Habakkuk? Personally, I turn to the book of Habakkuk when I need a reminder that I think I know how things should be. I think I know the answer. I think I know, and I might come before God even in prayer and say, God, give me this, because in my mind, if I don't have this, then what will my life be? And yet it's that reminder that God says, you think it should be one way, and actually there's a chance that it's going to be worse. But God is still on his throne. So why do I turn to Habakkuk? I turn to Habakkuk personally for three reasons, and I hope by the end of the day you can do the same thing. I turn to Habakkuk because it's my reminder to stay with God. And you know, there's times, and you've met people who say, well, I tried God, but then I asked the Lord, or I asked God to do this, and he let me down, and that's it, I'm done with God. The book of Habakkuk is my reminder to stay with God. Don't let go. The book of Habakkuk is my reminder that there's still hope in God. And the book of Habakkuk is my reminder to be still and listen to what God has to say for me. I'm going to flip back 10 years. I know it was 10 years. In fact, I know it was exactly 10 years. It was this week in 2008. The reason I know that is that it was the day of the 2008 presidential election. Bert and I, we were living with our kids in the United States. Our little guy was 8 years old. He was in second grade, grade two in Canada. And I went and picked him up from school, and it was the day of the U.S. presidential election, and I picked him up. Luke, some of you know him, he's a really good-natured, happy-go-lucky kind of person. My little guy got in the car, sullen, sad. I turned around, I said, Lukey, what's wrong? He goes, oh, Mom, if so-and-so becomes president of the United States, it is going to be so bad. And he started to tell me all the terrible things that were going to happen if a certain candidate was going to be president of the United States. Now, we had been tracking with the election and the polls, and we were pretty certain that actually that person was probably going to become president of the United States. My mother's mind is going, did a teacher say this to him? And you can imagine, as a mom, you're going, they better not be talking about politics in the grade two classroom. And so I said, Luke, like, what makes you think this? Well, it was the chatter on the playground. 7 and 8 year olds. Who knows what they were hearing from where? Who knows what pieces of news, Fox or CNN, or what mom and dad were saying at the table? But it was the perception of little kids about the evil of the world. And my child was afraid. And it was such a great opportunity for Bert and I that day to tell him about our God who was on the throne, and that our God was sovereign, and that even if things did take a turn for the worse, which they probably weren't necessarily going to do just because a certain person was president, that we still served a God who was not. He was the one who ruled and reigned, and God works all things together with his good, for his good, and it was such a great parenting opportunity. You know, we can be like that little 8-year-old, that when things look a certain way and we listen to certain voices and even our own voices in our own head, we go, oh, it's just, the world's a scary place, and life, life, what's the future going to be for me? And we can lose sight of the fact that the sovereign God is still on the throne, which is the message of Habakkuk. It might get worse. It might be more difficult for you personally in your life. It might be more difficult for us in a nation and in politics and with what's going on. We're on the eve of another election in the United States, and Canada's due for one in about a year, and things might get worse and things might change, but God is still never moved. He is on the throne. So why do I turn to Habakkuk? Well, I turn to Habakkuk because it's my reminder to stay with God. 2 weeks ago, the last verse in our reading from Habakkuk was actually chapter 2, verse 1, the beginning of the chapter we looked at today. And Habakkuk said, I will take my stand at the watchpost and station myself on the tower and look out to see what he, God, says to me, and I will answer concerning my complaint. Well, the word tower, when you look in the Old Testament about things, of God says he himself is our tower. It says that he's a tower that we can run to and be safe. And you know what happened in battle in those days? You went up into a tower because not only were you safe and protected, but you actually got a different perspective. Because you weren't just in the midst of the fray, but you could actually go and look down and see the battle. And that's our picture. It's my reminder to stay with God, to go into the tower because I'm safe with him, but also because I have his perspective. I can see and I can ask and I can see, how do you see things, God? I can reflect on books like Habakkuk and say, ah, I've got an answer. It's my reminder that there's hope in God. Last week, we were still in Habakkuk 2, and here's what we read last week. For still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. Okay, it's going to happen. It may seem slow. So what we know, the promises of God, what we know, it may seem slow. Wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. Behold, his soul is puffed up. It is not upright within him. But the righteous will live by faith. It's my reminder. Habakkuk is my reminder that there's hope in God. But Habakkuk's also my reminder that there's a time to be still and listen to what God's saying. And here's the beauty of this book, is that it's okay to complain and bring your complaint before the Lord. And we talk about lament here in this church. We talk about it's okay to say, God, I don't understand. This is difficult. We talk about the writings of David in the book of Psalms and how many times it's a, where are you, God? Where are you? It's okay. It's okay to bring our questions to God. But then it's a time to listen, to be silent and to listen. The last verse that we read today from chapter 2, my reminder to be still and listen, it says this, but the Lord is in his holy temple. He's still there. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Does that mean we're never supposed to complain or bring our lament to God? No. But even as you watch the pattern, as we've worked through this book of the Bible, you see there's a time to ask and then there's a time to listen. Eugene Peterson, a theologian, amazing man, passed away just about 2 weeks ago, American, translated the Bible into something that we call the Message, modern language. And I love this. It says, but oh, God is in his holy temple. Quiet, everyone. A holy silence. Listen. Habakkuk is a reminder for me that when, after I've poured out my complaint, my questions to the Lord, then it's that reminder, he's still in his temple, he's still on the throne. To take that time of silence and to listen to what the Lord might say to me. So, my personal struggle, I started out, I think I know, but I don't know. So I think I know, I have some political opinions. I will not go there today because I'm often wrong. But often my family would tell you, I have political opinions and I watch news and I'm kind of a news junkie and I think I know. I think I know what God should do, what candidate God should endorse. And I think I know, but I don't know. But you know, if I lean to what I think I know and those things don't happen and the political situation is shaky and scary, and what happens in my own heart is fear. So when I lean on my own understanding and I think I know, but I don't know, fear grips me. I can do that with my kids. My children are all adults now. And sometimes I can think I know the path they should take, the choices they should make, the place they should live. And I think I know how I should protect them from every evil. And when I allow those kind of scary things to get into my heart, a fear grips me. And you can apply that to a lot of different things. When you think you don't, you know, but it's not looking the way you think it should be, and the fear that can, and we can forget who's on the throne. Sometimes I think I know what I need for my happiness and success and security. And that might be monetary things or possessions. And then this little thing called greed might rise up in my heart where I just think I'm a nobody if I don't have this house to live in, or these clothes to wear, or this handbag, and or it might go bigger than that. This salary, because surely I'm worth making this amount of money because somebody, and then I can compare, and greed rises in my heart, and I start to think that I can define for myself what my future looks like. That I think I know, but I don't know. You know, the other thing that happens for me when I think I know. I think I know how just things must surely be. If it doesn't turn out this way, I can fall into envy, and I can look at what you have or the life that you're living and think, why did God let you, and yet he made me, or he took this from me and took, you know, you start to get that I've lost something, and I can begin to let envy rise in my heart. A perfect example is you, for any of you who know our story, Bert and I, if you've been around a bit, we've moved a lot, but like every number of years, not like, so we've lived in Vancouver, and then we've lived in Calgary, and then we've lived in Nashville, and then we've lived in Toronto, and once again, we've moved, and we're living in Waterloo, looking at what it's going to be like to plant our next Every Nation Church in Waterloo. But, you know, sometimes in my heart, because my journey that God has had me on means maybe not staying in one place for the rest of my life. But sometimes it's really easy to let that thing creep in that God has been nicer to other people than he is to me. And so that thing called envy rears its head. And I think I have this phrase in my own head that sometimes I say out loud, is that I get a little envious because some of my friends have forever homes. In other words, the house that they raised their kids in, now their grandkids get to come back to the same place. And I don't have a forever home. And Bert and I have had some nice homes. We've lived nice places. And then God says, now it's time to sell. And so we pick up and move on. And sometimes I can envy somebody else's journey in life, that God didn't require of them the exact same things that he required of me, because I think I know what's best for me, and sometimes I don't know. Sometimes it's about my future. When we were going to move from Calgary to Nashville, probably the year before we moved, our pastor, overseer, lives in Nashville, and he kept saying, I really want you guys to move to Nashville. I really think it'd be good if you moved to Nashville. And I kept saying to him, why would God want me to move to Nashville? I'm a Canadian, and Americans have enough Christians, and Canada doesn't have enough Christians, so why would God want me to do that? And I could not see how that could be part of God's plan for our life, because I thought I knew, but I didn't know. And now looking back, I see all the things, even how God let us do great things, fun things in Canada while we were living in the U.S. we never would have dreamed of. So listen, you know, the struggle is real. We do face things externally, internally. And it's okay to say, God, I'm really struggling right now. My struggle is real. And to bring those things to God. My charge to me and to you is stay in that tower. Stay close to God. Wait for him, because he's going to work and move in your life. He is. It might not be what you think it's going to look like. And then take that time and listen. Be still before God. Because when I think I know, I don't often or always know exactly how things are going to work out or what they're going to look like. James, the brother of Jesus, said, you say, tomorrow I'm going to go do this or that. I'll spend a year here. I'll make a profit. Yet you don't know what tomorrow will bring. It would be better to say, if the Lord wills. Jesus himself said, don't worry about tomorrow. Today has enough trouble of its own. Tomorrow will take care of itself. The struggle's real. A book like Habakkuk reminds us, there's challenges around us, inside of us. But what we can be certain of is this. Jesus, he was on the road to Emmaus. He died. He rose from the dead. He's walking down a road with two buddies, and they don't recognize him. Two of his disciples, they don't recognize him. And he starts with Moses and the prophets. And he interpreted all the scriptures. So what they had up until that point, the words that God had given them up until that point, what we now might call the Old Testament, he said he interpreted them as being about him. The law of Moses, the prophets. And so even in a book like Habakkuk, here's this verse, Habakkuk 2:16. You will have your fill of shame instead of glory. Drink yourself, show your uncircumcision. The cup of the Lord's right hand will come around to you. When you read about the cup in the Old Testament, it's talking about God's judgment. Like, it's not nice stuff. And it's saying, you do these things, and what's going to come to you is God's judgment, and utter shame will come upon your glory. For those of us at this time in history and having the story of Jesus that access to us, and we see those words, the cup of the Lord, and it should take us to a place, if you've read any of the Gospels, three of the Gospels talk about Jesus the night before he was crucified, and he's in a garden praying, and what are his words? His words are, Father, take this cup away from me, but not your will, but mine. And even in the midst of a little book like Habakkuk, there is a glimpse to the future that, yeah, there is a cup. There's judgment, and there's stuff that happens when people and nations live contrary to God. Oh, but there was one who said, I don't want to drink this cup, Father. It's hard. It's the cup of your judgment. It's bearing the sins of the world upon myself. It's taking upon myself separation that Jesus didn't deserve, but we did. He said, I don't want to drink this cup, but not my will, but yours. And he took it. And he took it in the form of dying for us. And so even in the midst of Habakkuk, we see it said, utter shame will come upon you. You know what Jesus did? He said, but for the joy of the cross, for the joy of what lies before me, I'm going to bear your shame. And so there's hope in the midst of something that we read that's difficult, that still seems to pertain to the world we live in today. There's that hope and that glimpse of the one who took that cup, who took that shame, who took mine and who took yours upon himself. And so we're going to look to Jesus, the author of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated with God on that throne, in that temple, in that tower that we run to. Stay with God. When things get rough, keep doing the things you know you need to do. Don't miss your small group. Pray, read your Bible. Hope in God. Don't lose that hope. Don't let the things shake that hope out of you, because our hope is in him, not in what we see. Take that time, stop, listen to what God's saying through the word, through one another, and speaking in your heart. As we close, 2 weeks ago there was that horrendous shooting in Pittsburgh, where in a place of worship, a gunman walked in and killed 11 people. Man. Well, on social media, I saw this quote from the Talmud, which is a book of Jewish writings, history, and I thought, how relevant to what we read when we look at a book like Habakkuk. Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now. This is from the book of Micah, some of this. Do justly now. Love mercy now. Walk humbly now. You're not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. Stay with God.
You've been listening to a message from Every Nation GTA. Thanks for joining us. For more information, visit our website at everynationgta.org.